Well, the project is coming near to an end. It was put together more than 2 years ago, auspiced by the federal government through Prime Minister and Cabinet, to look at what works and what doesn't work in the suicide prevention space, in that life and death space, to map services, to map what also is needed in communities that are without, to amplify that voice. And also a component of it is the critical response, which responds to suicide-related trauma, because that's an elevated risk group, to also evaluate what more needs to be done there. The other major piece of work that we're doing is putting together, or have put together, an evaluation tool endorsed by Prime Minister and Cabinet and Government that will actually hopefully gear a certainty of funding to the fundees, because what actually hasn't occurred in the past is such a tool in place where the governments actually are happy with measurable indicators.
Can you talk about some of the programs that are working throughout Australia?
Look, for me, Kylie, the suicide prevention space is still an inauthentic space. But in terms of what works, I can highlight a number of programs that do work. For instance, the Yiriman Project, which is in the Kimberley, run by the local Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander-led Law and Culture Centre, based in Fitzroy, takes 400 young people on country each year and helps rebuild their identity, helps with their self-esteem. It has a cradle-to-the-grave approach, and in terms of mentoring, and has actually, you know, supported quite a few of their people from that cohort of 400 each year into various employment. But they have an early interventionist approach also. They don't actually wait till something bad happens before they actually come to the fore. They can identify from within their communities people that are potentially at risk and actually support them and try and navigate them to a place of well-being. I'm a huge supporter of the CALACS Yiriman Project, and I think it's powerful in terms of re-establishing cultural connection and identity and self-esteem and self-worth. The government often argued to me that if it's so good, Jerry, the Yiriman Project, how come the Kimberley suicides are going up and up and up? Well, my argument back to them was Yiriman's a good project. Yiriman does work. But there are competing factors in Kimberley. The fact that there's such extreme socioeconomic disadvantage, that 1 in 10 of all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in the Kimberley are homeless, and in some form of homelessness and outside natural disasters and civil strife. That's amongst one of the world's highest homelessness rates. The majority of people live under the Henderson poverty line. 1 in 7 of all the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander suicides in the nation actually occur in Kimberley, 1 in 4 in Western Australia. But the Yiriman Project does change lives. It improves lives. It saves lives. It makes a huge difference. More of that needs to be rolled out right across the Kimberley and other parts. There's other programs too that have a more psychosocial aspect to themselves. Look, what's actually leading to the suicide is multifactorial. There's the socioeconomic disadvantage. There's the constancy of traumas. There's the degeneration to aggressive complex traumas from that constancy of trauma. And we need to address all of these tailor-made. Another program that really works well, and speaking to you today, this morning, I brought through Prime Minister and Cabinet the organisation Nullarmaya, the Nullarmaya Aboriginal Corporation in Belmont, Perth. And they're a prison to well-being, to hope, to training, to education program that actually improves lives. It's run by a former inmate who had been in juvenile detention from the age of 13, in and out, until 31 years of age, in and out of adult prison. This is Mervyn Eads, a Noongar man in the southwest of Western Australia. He's turning lives around with a really powerful blackfella approach, and he's got the trust of people in juvenile detention, where he goes in and talks from 3 months prior release from 15 years of age and onward, and similarly so in the adult prisons. And because of the trust that he has with them and the blackfella approach, relationships are built very fast, and mentors them through all the people that are involved in Nullarmaya, builds up, bridges them with literacy and numeracy, and gets them into training, education. And he's got 200 on the books already. He's done this off for the smell of an oily rag. There's a lot of good souls in there. There's a lot of advocacy that wraps around the Nullarmaya Aboriginal Corporation. So that's a program that actually works. And as we speak today, this morning, we had Prime Minister and Cabinet in, as I try and lobby for such programs around the country to be funded. That one will be funded more than likely. There's no likelihood of it not being funded. But prison to work stuff is actually really important, Kylie, because the reality is that 1 in 9 of all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders living, this is my research, 1 in 9 has been to prison. And that's an abomination, racialized lens amongst the highest in the world. But the more west we go, the worse it gets. In the Northern Territory and Western Australia, it's 1 in 6. one in six. The most vulnerable individuals actually come through the prison system, and actually you're 10 times more likely to take your life or lose your life in the first year post-release than at any time while in prison. So despite the tragedy of unnatural deaths in custody, you're actually 10 times more likely in that first year post-release to take your life. We don't do enough for them. We actually screw people over. We strand them post-release. So the prison to work stuff's important. An alumni could be a signature piece on the ways forward.
Were you shocked by what you saw of the ABC footage at Don Dale? Or is this something that you knew about already?
Kylie, I wasn't shocked, and actually I've been writing about it for a few years. A lot of outlets have been writing about what had happened at Don Dale, the Courier Mail. There were the reports that were coming out. Major mainstream newspapers had been putting it out there piecemeal about the gassings, about some of the brutality. But it's a dime a dozen. I've been hearing it all my life. I work with a lot of youths and adults and families who are in or who have family in the prisons and juvenile detention. When Banksia Juvenile Detention Facility, the riots occurred a few years ago by 60 kids, and 120 kids from Banksia had to be moved to, sadly, to an adult prison nearby. They don't riot for no good reason. No one riots for no good reason. Similarly so, when you got protesters on the roofs at Alice Springs at the jail and right across the country, I've been hearing these stories of complaints, of brutality, of bashings, of lockdowns 23 hours a day, of isolation, of separation, of degradation, of physical abuse, of a culture of punishment for two decades. You've got individuals like Jander Marakad who have talked profoundly of his experiences in the 80s and 90s in juvenile detention. Mervyn Eads, who I've just mentioned, can talk similarly so of juvenile detention in adult prisons, of the bashings and the brutality that goes on. I've heard these complaints right across the country from Banksia to Don Dale to Townsville for years, and there's a sameness about them that actually corroborates that this is the grim reality of what occurs. It is a good thing that it's actually got out and touched a nerve with the nation, that, and maybe something will be done about the behaviours.
You're listening to SBS Living Black Radio. I'm Kylie Thorpe, and I'm speaking with Jerry Georgiadis. He's from the Institute for Social Justice and Human Rights, and he's part of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders Suicide Prevention Evaluation Project.
People come into prison and into juvenile detention and leave it worse than what they went in. So there's a constancy of trauma that leaves a sense of desperation. And also, we don't do anything for them while in prison. We don't do the restorative stuff, the well-being, the healing, the education. And this is where we've got to go. The Royal Commission into the NT, it should have been a wider commission nationally. And it should have looked at the issues that actually lead young people in there, what more can be done to actually help them. But what we really need, Kylie, is a Royal Commission into Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander suicide. If we look at the suicide as the tip of the iceberg, then we'll look at all the multifactorial issues and the intertwining issues. Royal Commissions are still our most powerful mechanism in the nation to investigate deep-layered something. What we need is wide terms of reference and powers. But I do believe that unless we have a Royal Commission into Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander suicide, if I may say sadly, tragically, if we don't have it, we will soak up more blood, more tragedy, more pain. And I travel this continent 7-8 months of the year. I go in and out of communities responding to suicide-related trauma, trying to do what more can be done. I've sat with hundreds of families around their tables. It is not true that there's shame and taboo, silence about all the sensitivity about speaking out. They're all speaking out. They're all pouring out their heart. They all want a Royal Commission. They all want not to lose another member of their family. Kylie, what they're all saying is that they want to speak. It's the listening that's not happening. It's the listening that's not happening. It's the listening that's never happened. And the wider community has done a pass the buck silence about it all or whatever. We're losing officially 5%, 5.2%, 1 in 19 of all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people of deaths each year as a suicide. And in my research says it's actually 1 in 10. It's an abomination. It's a humanitarian crisis. And yet, we don't have a Royal Commission, and yet we're still fighting tooth and nail to get that Royal Commission. It is an indictment of the nation that we do not have this Royal Commission and that we are still fighting for it and that we are being delayed to get a Royal Commission to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander suicide. If it had been any other cohort of Australians, if it had been, you know, as Matthew Cook, the chair of NACHO, said, if it had been kids in Western Sydney or out of Melbourne, and white kids, there'd be an outcry, there'd be a Royal Commission, it'd be done and dusted. We've had Royal Commissions for less. We have a humanitarian crisis in this country. It's the pressing need of our time. We are losing people at a rate that should be unimaginable in the 12th biggest economy. If we don't have a Royal Commission into Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander suicides, then something's really wrong.